dollars. We discussed that how Shukadeva Goswami, after mentioning that the topmost process for everyone at all time and especially at the time of death, he mentioned that it is bhakti, which is characterized by Shravanam, Kirtanam and Smaranam. And especially of all the practices is this Harer Namanu Kirtanam. He established as the topmost. But having said that, not everyone who had assembled there shared that opinion. So, Parikshit Shukadeva Goswami starts sharing the other popular opinions. So, first he starts out by speaking about the most popular amongst those opinions, which is the highest prayojan is liberation and the means to attain that is Ashtanga Yoga. So that's what he has started discussing yesterday. So he spoke about Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama. Then after studying the mind by practice of Pranayama, he said that Shubharte Dharayadhya, one has to fix the mind on that auspicious object of meditation. And then he said, after doing dharana, he said, Tatra eka avayavam dhyayet avyachinnena chetasa. Then one should start performing dhyana, that is meditating on the individual limbs of the Lord. Then slowly, after perfecting the dhyana, then when one reaches a stage where one's mind is absolutely not deviated by any other thought or material impression, then he is said to have reached the stage of samadhi. But then he says that this will not be easy. Manak karmabir akshiptam. The mind will be very much disturbed by the past impressions. So, and then he says that at that point of time, Parikshit Maharaj asked this question, what is this dharana? How do you attain this dharana? How do you reach the stage of dharana? And yadrishiva hare dashu purushasya manomalam. And what is the easiest and fastest way of dealing with these impressions which trouble the mind? So, in response, Shukadeva Goswami says, if you are not able to attain steady dharana, then go back and check if you have done the basics right. Jitasano, jitashwaso, jitasango, jitendriya, stule bhagavato rupe manas sandharayadhya. Check if you have perfected the asana right. Check if you have perfected the pranayama. Have you regulated your breath properly? Because if that is not regulated, then it's not possible. In the same context that we also saw as devotees, just like for an Ashtanga Yogi, if he has not perfected his preliminary limbs of sitting in the perfect posture, regulating the breath, controlling the senses through pratyahara, if these are not properly accomplished, then dharana is not possible. Similarly, for us also, for devotees to engage the mind, to absorb the mind in activities of Krishna consciousness is not possible if the senses are not constantly engaged. If there is a leeway, the senses get some free time to engage in sense gratificatory activities, then immediately on the surface of the mind, the sense gratificatory impressions creep up. And for which we already have a natural ruchi. But we have not developed that ruchi, we have not trained our senses to taste the holy name or the holy scriptures or holy association we have not tasted. We are just practicing now. So those impressions are very strong. So as a sadhaka, just like for an ashtanga yogi, it is not possible to perfect that dharana without perfecting the previous steps. Therefore, for a vaidhi sadhaka, without perfectly practicing the karma rupa bhakti, where the senses are constantly engaged in some kind of Krishna conscious activities, whether our mind may get engaged or not is secondary. But mind can get engaged only if the senses are constantly engaged. So somehow, the system has to... So Prabhupada gave the ISKCON sandwich. Right? Morning start with the morning program. And in between you do services. Evening you end with the Bhagavad Gita class. That's a basic framework. But within that we have to figure out and very consciously and scrutinizingly fill small gaps, so that there is no time for the senses to engage in any unfavorable activity, so that the mind accumulates those kind of impressions. So very relevant question that Parikshit Maharaj has asked here, that what is this object of meditation, and how is the dharana accomplished, and how the mind can be cleansed of these unfavorable impressions. So in response, Shukadeva Goswami says, Jitasano Jitashvaso Jitasango. Check, you may have perfected the asana and breathing process, but are you sure that there is no unfavorable association which can create obstacles? Jitendriya, then has that control of mind manifested in the form of controlled senses? Check that out. So if all of that is there and still your impressions are still troubling you, then I think you should meditate on the Virat form of the Lord. Sthule Bhagavato Rupe Manasandharayeddiya. Like that. Then, this is where we ended yesterday. So today we will continue our discussion. So what is this Thule Bhagavato Rupe? What is this gross form of the Lord? What is this Virat Purusha? Visheshastasya dehoyam stavishtascha staviyasam yatredam vyajjate vishvam bhutam bhavyam bhavacchasat. Visheshastasya dehoyam, the body of the universal form, stavishtascha staviyasam, is more solid than the solid. Yatra idam, within this form, vishvam bhutam bhavyam bhavacca sat. Within that form, the past, present and future of the universe, vyajyate, they are seen. Generally, whenever there is a description of the universal form, this is the key. This point will always be there. In this form, you can see whatever that existed in the past, whatever that exists in the present, and whatever that would exist in the future. Rest are all details. Rest are all details. Just like the details will keep changing. Like for example, when Arjuna saw the universal form, there is a description of Duryodhan getting crushed and Karna getting crushed and so many such things that he sees. So when the universal form is described in Bhagavatam, those kind of descriptions may not be there. So that does not mean that the universal form seen by Arjuna and the universal form discussed in Bhagavatam are different. Because when Arjuna is sharing what he is seeing in the universal form, and when Sanjaya is similarly sharing what Arjuna was seeing to Dhritarashtra, definitely they will be sharing about those scenes or incidents that they can commonly relate to. Like for example, I give this example, if let's say a train comes from Delhi to Bombay and devotees are coming from Vrindavan to Mumbai in that train. So you go to receive them and you know, some senior devotees are also coming. So as soon as you come back, someone asks you, hey, who all came in the train? Then you describe, oh, you know, Govind Prabhu came, Bhagavatinath Prabhu came, Gaurang Prabhu came, all that descriptions you may give. Then similarly, let's say in the very next bogi, a group of, let's say Brahma Kumaris also came. And someone from the Brahma Kumari camp went to receive them also. So if someone asks him, hey, who all came in the train? Do you think he will also say, Govind Prabhu came, Radha Gopinath Prabhu came, Shamanand Prabhu came? No. He will give, that person will give a different description. Right? But that does not mean both of them came in a different train. So, even though the description is completely different, there is no overlap. So therefore in descriptions of universal form, we should not look for the details to see if it's the same universal form or not. Because the details will be according to those people whom we can commonly relate to. Otherwise, in the same train, so many other people came, but we don't have a common, both of us do not recognize those people, so we may not share about those people. So, this is the Bhagavatam version which says, whatever existed in the past, whatever exists in the present, and whatever it exists in the future, everything is covered by the universal form. Okay? So, which means that universal form also covers GV at this present time when this Vidyapeeth class is going on. That is also covered. Maybe if Muktakesh Prabhu or Harshad Prabhu is given a vision of universal form, they'll be able to identify, oh, this is GV Satsang Bhavan, like that. But rest of the things we may not identify because we have never seen it and we can't relate to it. So this is the key. Sarvam purushame vedam bhutam bhavyam bhavachet. Yatredam vajjate vishvam bhutam bhavyam bhavachet. Bhutam bhavyam bhavat means whatever exists in the past, whatever exists in the present, whatever would exist in the future, everything is covered by this universal form. Now you see, in the sixth canto, in the sixth chapter of second canto also, similar description comes. I told you the second description of the universal form. It says, sarvam purushame vedam bhutam bhavyam bhavachayat tenedam avritam vishvam vitastum adhitishtati. Whatever exists in the present and whatever will exist in the future, whatever existed in the past is covered by the Lord in this form. Okay? Now you see the Bhagavad Gita description. Ihaikastam jagat krishnam pashyadya sacharacharam mamadehi gudakesha yachanya drashtum ichasi. O Arjuna, whatever you wish to see, behold at once in this body of mine. The universal form can show you whatever you now desire to see, whatever you may want to see in the future. Everything moving and non-moving is here completely in one place. So Bhagavad Gita description also mentions the same thing. Right? And the Purusha Sukta prayer also says the same thing. Sahasra Sivirusha Purusha, Sahasraksha, Sahasrapath, Sabhumin Vishvato Vritta, Atyadashtat Dashangulam, and Purusha Evedam Sarvam, Yadbhutam, Echabhavyam. This Purusha covers whatever exists in the past, present and future. So this is the key that we have to look for, not for the details. So that description comes everywhere. The Bhagavad Gita, the various descriptions of Purusha, Virat Purusha in Bhagavatam, and the Purusha Sukta prayers, all of that talk about this Purusha covering everything that existed in the past, everything that is present now, and everything that would present in the future. Rest are all details. That will keep on varying, depending on the people whom we can relate to. So is it clear? But of course, the acharyas do mention that in Bhagavad Gita, apart from showing this form, Krishna also showed to Arjuna the form of time. So, Srila Vishnu Thakur mentions that many facets of the Virat Rupa were shown. One is like showing a motion picture. Sorry, not a motion picture, a still picture. Then the Kala Rupa of the Virat Rupa is just like, you know, in olden days. I don't know if you have even heard about it. You know, before the actual theatres and all were very popular, a person used to have the, you know, the spool, the film spool of the particular movie or something, and he would be dragging it on the road, and then he would play a drum and say, please come, and then he will charge 50 paise or something, and you can look at it, and he will keep rotating the spool. So, and then somehow play the music also, and it will sort of a very crude way of showing that movie. He would physically rotate the spool, and the music will also be playing, so the person can see it in the form of actually a motion picture, sort of a motion picture. So Prabhupada gives a similar analogy to show about the to write about this Kala Rupa that was shown to Arjuna. So it's basically the same thing. Instead of showing it in the form of still pictures, it's in the form of a rotating spool of film. Prabhupada exactly uses the same words in his Bhagavad Gita. So there is more than one way in which the same Virat Rupa was shown. But ultimately the same Virat Rupa was only shown in a different way. Either once in the form of a still picture and then in the form of a motion picture. The motion picture is called the Kala Rupa. Like that. Okay. So, here Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, common man is struck by power just as the aborigines are attracted to lightning and a mountain. So, the aborigines are like Adivasis in our language. And therefore, they worship them. So, they sometimes worship the mountain, they pay obeisances to lightning whenever the lightning strikes and so on. Similarly, the asuras also want to see for themselves, and therefore they don't accept the scriptural authorities and the acharyas who talk about the personal forms of the Lord. So they may not accept scriptural authorities. They may want pratyaksha for everything. So that's the problem. Therefore there is the Virat Rupa which they can pay homage to. Therefore there is Virat Rupa. Because here everything is pratyaksha. Because if you say that this boy who is herding the cows and carrying his father's slippers on his head, he is the one who controls this unlimited number of millions of universes, and they will say, tell me something reasonable. But if you show them the Virat Rupa of actually a person having all these planetary systems as his bodily limbs, then that is little more reasonable for them to imagine. And they already have that tendency to pay homage to something really great and fantastic. So that's something that can capture them. But a pure devotee like Arjuna is not accustomed to seeing such a material form. Therefore, he had to be given special eyes to see that Virat form. So, Arjuna had the transcendental vision. Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochane. So, with that form, he could, it's not possible to see that universal form with that eyes. It's not possible to see the universal form because it's a celestial form. So, he had to be given celestial eyes which could see the form. But he was not given a celestial mind which could actually process that form. So, with celestial eyes he could see the form, but he still had the pure devotee mind only. So, he saw the form but could not process it. Please take this away, please take this away. Natumam shakyase drashtum. I am not able to see this form, O Krishna. You know, this is really too ghastly for me. But at the same time, this vision was given to the demigods who had a celestial vision and celestial mind. They were happily showering flowers on the universal form. But Arjuna was scared, not for his safety, but he was losing that relationship that he felt with Krishna. That Sakya was melting away. That Sakya Ras. So he could not tolerate that feeling of losing his friend. So he immediately wanted that vision to be removed. So, like that, that's what same thing Prabhupada is mentioning here. As Prabhupada writes in one of his purports that of 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he says that Arjuna could not tolerate this godless display of opulence. So, universal form, he calls it godless display of opulence. So, a pure devotee could not appreciate it at all. What to speak of that the Vrajavasis can't even tolerate Krishna wearing a mukut in Dwaraka. That itself is too much for them. I was just recently, after a long time, last 2 days, I've been reading this book called The Legacy of Love. You know, Mother Ladini's biography, written by Yamuna Mataji. So I was reading that book, and how many of you have read that book? So, you should read some of her diary writings. Her personal diary, which they found after she left, and then Yamuna Mataji had written. You know, such emotions of, you know, which are very similar to, Vrajavasi's emotions. And it's not that such literatures were available at that time. Prabhupada had not written anything of that sort. But right from the beginning, she had such a deep attachment for serving the deities that she dedicated her whole life for that. And when she was staying in a very old and run-down farm in New Vrindavan, with her deities there, worshipping them in a very simple way. And one day, the leader of the community said that we will have to shift the deities to another farm where they can accept more opulent worship. And then she pens down her what she was going through in the form of, you know, her diary jottings. So really amazing feelings, you know, you can relate. And that how, you know, the higher stages of bhakti, some people may say it's not, ISKCON cannot provide or something like that. And you can clearly see those feelings. She would not express it to anyone else, but in her personal diary writings, it's very clearly evident. And the foreword to that book, the foreword and introduction to that book, written by His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj and His Holiness Raghunath Swami Maharaj. They write the foreword and introduction to that book. And Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, after describing about Ladini Mataji, he says that, you know, I can only describe her properly in this way. And he writes, she had the following qualities. Kshantir, avyarta kalatvam, mana shunyata, asha bandha, samutkanta, namadani, sadaruchi. And he writes them and explains them. He says that he doesn't, because it might be a little controversial to say that she was at the stage of bhava or prema. He says, but instead he said that her, in her life she perfectly exhibited all these qualities. Without using the word bhava or prema at all, he writes like that. That's how he ends his foreword. And if you see her life, and if you see not so much the, you know, how she dealt with others, she was not like crying and hair standing on end and all, but then in her personal life, which you can access through her diary writings, her poems for Jagannath and all that, it's very clearly visible. And she used to write, do you want to go there and accept the opulent worship? And where would be us? Both of us would get lost amidst that opulent worship. Don't we like it simple? Like that, in a very simple way, she would jot down the feelings that she had for worshipping Lord Jagannath. So that's the mood of a devotee, you know. In the Vrajavasis would not even like to see Krishna wearing mukut. Yes, that's the extreme. And Arjuna was somewhere in between. He could not see the universal form and tolerate it. It was complete godless display of opulence. Of course, for him, Krishna wearing mukut is something fine. That was the role of the Krishna that he was relating to in Sakyaras. Just Kshatriya, Kshatriya, you know, relating in that mode is easy. So, Arjuna was not given a celestial mind, only the celestial eyes. So the, you know, the CPU could not process the signal. Such people of Asuric mentality should ask, such people of Asuric mentality should ask any cheap incarnation to exhibit the Virat Rup. So no one should ask, accept anyone as a as an incarnation. So Prabhupada says that you should ask them to show the Virat Rup. Therefore, by accepting this Virat Rup form of the Lord, slowly the impurities in their heart is destroyed. Then they are ready to accept the spiritual form. So, like that. If they cannot accept a higher personality, then they should start by accepting the Virat form of the Lord. Like that. Further descriptions. Vyandakosha sharirasmin saptavarana samyate vairaja purusho yosau bhagavan bharanashraya. Asmin andakosha sharire, within this universal shell, sapta avarana samyate. Sometimes it is said that there are seven layers, sometimes it is said that there are eight layers. Okay. The seven layers are bhumi, apo, anala, vayo, kham, then ahankar and mahatattva. And the eighth layer is pradhan. So what these are, we will very soon come to know. But for now, you just remember these are the eight layers. And each layer is 10 times thicker than the previous layer. So this is the, he says that within the universal shell made of the seven layers exists the universal form. The Lord who is the object of dharana, dharanashraya. He is the dharanashraya for this person. So, here it is mentioned. Where does he reside? He resides in the universe of 500 million yojanas. That's the diameter of this universal egg. 500 million yojanas. One yojana is 8 miles. So 500 million is about 40 billion, 4 billion, yeah, 4 billion miles. And with 7 coverings of earth, water, fire, air, ether, false ego, and mahatattva, who is he? Whom does this universal body belong to? This gross body belongs to, okay, so just like we have a gross body, we have a subtle body, we have a soul residing in it, and we have Shiradakasa Vishnu who is sitting as a super soul in our body, right? Similarly, the universal form also has a gross body, a subtle body, a soul and a super soul. Okay. So the gross body of the universal form is all the gross elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, all these gross elements put together of a particular universe, that conglomerate is called the gross body of the universe. And the subtle body is all the subtle ingredients, mind, intelligence, the subtle senses, all of that put together is the subtle form of the universal form, subtle body of the universal form. What is the soul of that universal form? Yes. Then what is, who is the super soul of that universal form? The soul is Brahma. You are sort of close, but not exactly right. I will tell you why. Who is the soul of this universe? Hiranyagarbha. Right. Hiranyagarbha is right. Who is that Hiranyagarbha? Sometimes he is called Hiranyagarbha for a particular reason. We will see why. But what is that Hiranyagarbha? Shailesh Prabhu. So if the gross body of the universal form is the conglomerate of all the gross elements of that particular universe, then the soul of that universal form is the conglomerate of all the souls residing in that universe. That is also an imagination. Sometimes that Hiranyagarbha is said that Garbhodakasaya Vishnu is the Hiranyagarbha. Sometimes it is mentioned. Sometimes Brahmaji is said to be addressed as that Hiranyagarbha. The universal egg is golden in color. Hiranya. So the soul of that Hiranya egg is the Hiranyagarbha. And who is the super soul of this universe? Garbhodakasaya Vishnu. Just like in our body we have Shiradakasaya Vishnu as the super soul, the universe has Garbhodakasaya Vishnu as the super soul. Like that. So yes, Prabhuji. So sometimes, so this universal form is an expansion of Garbhodakasaya Vishnu. So therefore, sometimes Hiranyagarbha is referred to, sometimes Garbhodakasaya Vishnu is also referred to as Hiranyagarbha, because it's his expansion. Sometimes, because a particular universe is controlled by Brahmaji, he is a secondary controller, sometimes he is also called Hiranyagarbha. It is said that Brahmaji has three forms. One is the four-headed Brahma form, second is the Hiranyagarbha form, and third is the Virat Purusha, the external Virat form that you see. So sometimes these two are also attributed to Brahma. The scriptures always speak this way. They have sometimes primary attribution and secondary attribution. Like for, I discussed about this sometime. Primary attribution and secondary attribution. Like for example, sometimes Radha Gopinath temple, let's say it has, Radha Gopinath temple has three drivers for driving people. And let's say Radha Gopinath temple has three cars also, hypothetically. And vehicle department has assigned one car to each driver. He has to take care of it, he has to wash it, keep it clean. And whenever someone has to be taken around, that particular driver takes that person in that car. Okay. So there are three drivers, let's say Lakshman Prabhu, Garud Prabhu and Daruk Prabhu. Three drivers are there, they have three cars. Okay. So now let's say some of my relatives are coming and I want them to bring them to GV from Mumbai. So I call the vehicle department in charge and ask, Prabhu, can you please arrange a vehicle? He said, yeah, we have a vehicle, so you can take. So which one? He said, you take Lakshman Prabhu's vehicle. So you may say. And I understood. What he really meant was, you can take that vehicle which Lakshman Prabhu is taking care of. It is not Lakshman Prabhu's vehicle. Right? It is Radha Gopinath's vehicle. Correct, man? So primarily it belongs to Radha Gopinath Prabhu. Secondarily, it is being taken care of by Lakshman Prabhu. But if he says, take Radha Gopinath Prabhu's vehicle, sorry, Radha Gopinath's vehicle, then I will not understand because all three are Radha Gopinath's vehicle only. So for convenience purpose, I need to say that please take Lakshman Prabhu's vehicle. But we all know it does not belong to Lakshman Prabhu. So, that belonging to Lakshman Prabhu is a secondary attribute. Primarily, it belongs to someone else, but secondarily, it is attributed to. Similarly, the Virat Purusha or the Hiranyagarbha, primarily, is an expansion of Garbhodak Sai Vishnu. But because Brahmaji takes care of those universes, ICO, in care of Brahma, so therefore, sometimes that word Hiranyagarbha is used to address Brahmaji also. He is called as Hiranyagarbha sometimes. And the Virat form also, it said that Brahmaji expands as the Virat. Like that sometimes some descriptions it comes. We should not be bewildered by it. Because even within Bhagavad Gita, many times this kind of secondary attribution comes. Krishna says that aham bija pradapita, right? He says that I am the seed giving father. So who is the seed giving father? Krishna in his 200 form playing a flute, he is the seed giving father. Whom is he referring to? He is talking not Lord Shiva. He is talking about Karanadaka Sai Vishnu. So he is the one who glances and impregnates the material nature. He is talking about Karanadaka Sai Vishnu. Right? Sometimes he says, Sarvasya Chaham Hridhanya Vishto Matta Smritar Jnanam Apohanam Cha. Krishna says, I am the one situated in everyone's heart. Whom is he talking about? Shiva Gautama Vishnu. He is not personally present. One of his expansions is present, right? So sometimes he is identifying with Shiradaka Sai Vishnu. Sometimes he identifies with Karanadaka Sai Vishnu. Sometimes he identifies with Brahma. Can you tell me where in Bhagavad Gita is Krishna identifying with Brahma? Where in Bhagavad Gita? Aham Bija Pradapita is Karanadaka Sai Vishnu. Which chapter? Tenth chapter. Krishna says, Maharshaya Saptapurve Chatvaro Manavastata Madbhava Manasa Jata Esham Loke Ima Praja. He says that the seven Saptarishis, the 14 Manus, all of them arose from my mind, he says. So arose from Krishna's mind? They all arose from Brahmaji's mind. They are the Manasa Putras of Brahma. But here, Krishna says, they all arose from my mind. So there he is relating, he is identifying with one of his Jiva Tattva expansions, Brahmaji. So therefore, in the whole of scriptures, there is lot of this primary attribution, secondary attribution going on. Okay. So therefore, the scriptures, unless one understands these scriptures through the explanation of the acharyas, we'll get bewildered. We will say that, what do you say? How can you tell that the Manus and the Saptarishis are Manasa Putras of Brahma? Krishna clearly tells here, Madbhava Manasa Jata. He says they are born from my mind. So they are Manasa Putras of Krishna. They are not Manasa Putras of Brahma. We may say that, because there is proof for it. So therefore, we have to understand that the scriptures speak in terms of this primary attribution and secondary attribution. Sometimes, primarily, the Hiranyagarbha and Virat Purusha, they belong to the Garbhodaksha Vishnu only. But secondarily, because Brahmaji takes care of that universe, it is secondarily attributed to Brahmaji also sometimes. So therefore, sometimes Brahmaji is addressed as Hiranyagarbha, sometimes he is addressed as the Virat Purusha. But we should understand it in what context it is mentioned. That's fine. Just like when I am addressing someone, depending on my consciousness, I may be addressing his soul or his body. So the Virat Purusha is his body, the Hiranyagarbha is his soul. Like that. So here it is mentioned, just like Shiradakasai Vishnu is the super soul of all the individual jivas, Garbhadakasai Vishnu is the super soul of this Hiranyagarbha. Is it clear? If some statement is not clear, just raise your hands. This universal form being worshipped as Garbhodakasai Vishnu's representative is also sometimes called Bhagavan. Like that. Sometimes Karanodakasai Vishnu is also called Sahasra Sirusha Purusha. One with 1,000 hands, 1,000 feet, 1,000 heads and so on. But for a different reason. The reason is that because he is the source of all the other incarnations. Millions of incarnations emanate from him. So in that sense, he is also sometimes addressed as a Purusha with 1,000 hands, 1,000 heads, like that. But Garbhodakasai Vishnu is also addressed as Sahasra Sirusha Purusha because the Virat Purusha is his expansion. So there is a difference. The same terminology is used, but for different reasons. Sahasra Sirusha Purusha sometimes in the Virat Purusha. And Karanodakasai Vishnu is called because he is the original source of the various Leela Avataras, Manvantara Avataras. They all trace out their source to Karanodakasai Vishnu. So therefore, Karanodakasai Vishnu is also called Sahasra Sirusha Purusha sometimes. But Garbhodakasai Vishnu himself comes from Karanodakasai Vishnu. So that way it is mentioned that when the scriptures sometimes speak of the Karanodakasai Vishnu as having 1,000 headed, this is the reason, they say. like that. So we'll move ahead. So what is this Virat Purusha? How does he look like? So this is described here. Patalametasya hi padamoolam patanti tashni prapade rasatalam mahatalam vishvasrijota gulfau talatalam vai purushasya janghe. Patala are his soles, rasatala is his heels, mahatala is his ankles, and talatala is his calves. Srila Prabhupada writes here, by these verses, we need to understand that outside the bodily existence of the Supreme Lord, the cosmic existence has no reality. That's what it means. Whatever you think this universe is made of, that is covered by this Virat Purusha. There is nothing beyond this Virat Purusha. But this does not mean that everything is God. This means that everything should remind him of God. One should not think that the Lord is actually made of matter. That's the improper understanding. Then Prabhupada says, how can one benefit from the conception of a Virat Rup? How can an imaginary form be beneficial? Prabhupada says, first is by giving up the lording over and exploiting mentality. And he sees that everything belongs to this person, then he does not think that, he does not falsely think that it belongs to him. Then he will stop this lording over and exploiting mentality. Second is by cultivating service attitude. If you want to enjoy, then you may want to serve him and cooperate with him, and then he may allow you to use some of what belongs to him. Otherwise, the Virat conception will have very little effect on the seer. If this is not generated, this service attitude is not generated, it will have very little effect. Okay, let's move ahead. Dvejanuni sutalam vishvamurte urudvayam vitalam chatalam cha mahitalam tad jaganam mahipate nadastalam nabisaro grananti. Sutala is the two knees, vitala is the lower part of the two thighs, and atala is the upper part of the thighs. Mahipala, the earth, is his hips. Bhuvar is the navel. Purastalam jyotiranikamasya griva maharvadanam vaijanasya taporaratim viduradipumsa satyam tisirshani sahasrasirshnaha. His chest is swarga, his neck is maharloka, his face is janaloka. The forehead of the universal form is known as tapoloka. The top of the heads of the thousand-headed form is satyaloka. Indradayo bahava ahurusraha karnao dushashtotra mamushya shabdaha na satyadasrau paramasya nase grano sagando mukamadniriddaha. The devatas such as Indra are his arms, the devatas of the directions, and the organ of hearing arise from his ears, sound arises from his organ of hearing, Ashwinis and the organ for smelling arise from his nostrils, fragrance arises from his organ of smelling, the flaming fire is his mouth, and so on. Okay. So basically many things will come here, you know. Some, they will be speaking about the gross sense, the subtle sense, the sense object, and so on. So, or the stulendriya, sukshmendriya. So, we have to understand what this is. So, for a particular act of sense gratification, there are many things that are involved. Let's say if I want to taste a rasgulla or a laddu or whatever. So first, I need a gross tongue. what you see here, the tongue has to be there. But sometimes the tongue is there very much, but when the body is afflicted with jaundice or something, that same tongue tastes that rasgulla as bitter. Okay, so something else is not functioning properly. Or sometimes people may have perfect, beautiful eyeballs and everything, but they may be blind, or they may have a very -8 or -7 eyesight. So there is something called sukshmendriya also, the subtle eyes. Shrotram chakshus sparshanam cha rasanam granam eva cha adishtaya manaschayam vishayam upasevate. So this shrotram chakshu rasanam granam, these are not talking about the stula indriya. It is talking about the sukshmendriya, the subtle. So when the soul moves from one grass body to another grass body, all this, the subtle body is carried with the soul. What constitutes the subtle body? All these sukshmendriyas. There are 5 sukshmendriyas for the jnana, for jnanendriyas. 5 sukshma jnanendriyas, 5 sukshma karmendriyas. Like for example, we may have a hand, but sometimes the hand is, we may have a paralysis. So the hand is there, but it cannot lift anything. So the ability to lift is said to be the subtle organ, and so on. So there is a gross organ, there is a subtle organ. Both need to function properly. And there are the sense devatas. For each organ, there is a sense devata who controls the subtle organ. For eyes, the sense devata is Surya. And for nose, the sense devata is Ashwini Kumaras. For ears, there are some devatas called Dig Devatas, devatas of directions. They control the sense of hearing. Like that. So for every Jnanendriya or Karmendriya, there is a sense devata who controls. So sometimes if someone has some eyesight problem and you go to an astrologer or someone, he would say, oh, there is some problem with the Surya, so you may have to perform some puja or something to pacify Surya Dev, like that. Because he is the controller of eyesight, sense devata. So you need the gross organ functioning properly, you need the subtle organ functioning properly, you need the sense devata to be happy and pleased with your karma. But of course, they cannot individually become happy or displeased with you. They are like called Chayeva Karma Sachiva. They are all, whatever is your karma, they act according to that karma. Then, you must have a mind. Ultimately, the pleasure or pain is felt, is imagined by the living entity through the agency of mind. Mind does not feel happiness or distress, because mind is jada vastu. And jiva also, because he is satchit ananda, he also cannot experience material pain or material pleasure. Then who experiences material pain or pleasure? Is it the mind? Is it the jiva? Who experiences material pain or pleasure? The soul misidentifying with the body. Correct. Okay. So through the, when the avidya makes the living entity misidentify with the body, then the jiva can imagine material happiness or material distress through the agency of mind. So when the mind has an impression of when the mind has these impressions of previous sense gratification or suffering, when it comes in contact with the sense object, then that creates happiness and distress. Let's say Harshad Prabhu has stayed with his parents for, let's say, the last 28, 29 years. How many years? 25 years. So 25 years he has stayed with his parents. So he has certain impressions. So when for some reason if his parents are going through some problems or troubles, then he is also distressed. Why? Because the mind has all these impressions of experiencing a very favorable time growing up under the care of his parents. Whereas, when I may hear about his parents' troubles, I may not undergo the same kind of distress. I may still undergo, because my mind has impressions of some relationship with Harshad Prabhu. So I may feel bad for him. I may not feel so bad for his parents, what his parents are going through. Because my mind has impressions of having an interaction with Harshad Prabhu only. Right? So, because of the mind being the storehouse of all these past impressions, the living entity imagines happiness or distress through the mind. So as soon as a sense signal comes, immediately the mind tells, oh, you had a very favorable experience. So let's say, for example, as soon as he looks at a rasgulla, immediately the mind says, favorable, favorable, favorable. Sankalpa, sankalpa, sankalpa. He'll say, okay, I want that rasgulla. Or if you had a very unfavorable experience, sometimes people start hating something because of a very bad experience. Like, for example, you know, my mother was very interested in South Indian classical music. But somehow, because of her economic situation growing up, she could not really afford to learn it properly, even though she had the skills. So, when she got married, she tried to live those desires through her children. So, she would push me and my sister to go learn music, learn music, learn music, like that. So, I was quite rebellious. I rebelled quite early. I said, no way. I am more interested in playing than all this learning music and all. So I rebelled. So I tried it for a few months and I said, no way, I can't do it. But my sister was little less rebellious. Even though she was not so skilled, she continued for a while. But then the teachers got fed up with her. So at some point when they were teaching her some a particular kirtana, which was in Rag Bhupali. So she sang in such a way that the teacher said, you know, I'll be extremely grateful to you if you stop coming to the class in front of all the other students. And it was such a insulting feeling for her. And this happened maybe about 20 years back. And even now, whenever she hears any song sung in that Rag Bhupali, she can't tolerate it. It's one of the very melodious ragas. The scriptures say that Krishna's favorite raga is Rag Bhupali. But one impression changed that whole thing. Even though it might be Krishna's favorite raga, I don't mind. Because of that one impression of Just one statement that she made, it changed the whole thing. If only the teacher would have tolerated for that one song and spoke the same sentence for the next song, it could have been some other raga that she would have started hating. So sometimes, we connect, or sometimes while we are eating a particular object, we get a phone call and we receive a very bad news. And at that time, you have this impression of having this particular, your favorite eatable in your hand. But that impression was a very strong impression, that next, every time you see that object, you remember that unfavorable incident. So, over a period of time, you start hating this object only. So, the living entity imagines material happiness and material distress to the agency of mind, which is the repository of all the previous experiences of your interaction with that sense object. So, the mind is needed. Then the intelligence is needed. If you like the sense object and you want more, the intelligence has to give you ideas. Or if you or sometimes the intelligence will push you to see, oh, check out the ingredients. What is all there in that? You may like that product, but maybe they have put some not so favorable ingredients in that, so you are not supposed to eat it. Like that, intelligence is also needed. And the sense object itself has to be there. So all of these are products of material nature. Material ahankar. Mind is the product of sattvic ahankar. The sense devatas are product of sattvic ahankar. Intelligence, the karmendriyas, jnanendriyas, the prana, everything is a product of rajasic ahankar. Bhumi, rapo, nalo, vayu, kam, these five are products of tamas ahankar. And their tanmatras are the sense objects, rupa, rasa, sparsha, gandha, shabda, all of it is product of tamas ahankar. So everything, all of these things are needed for the living entity to actually experience, to actually imagine sense pleasure. So that is why Bhagavad Gita says, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah. Ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. A living entity thinks himself to be the doer, which is actually in actuality done by prakriti. So how is prakriti the doer? In the form of this gross senses, subtle senses, mind, intelligence, these are the ones which are actually engaging in action. The jiva is only desiring. So prakriti kriyamanani means actually prakriti is the source of all of that. So as Krishna says, sattvam rajas tamaiti gunaha prakriti sambhava. The sattva rajas and tamogun are born out of prakriti only. And out of the sattva rajas and tamas are born the mind, intelligence, senses, everything. So in essence, everything is a source of prakriti only. So the sense gratificatory act is performed by prakriti and imagined by the jiva through the prakriti. So actually everything is done by prakriti only. That is why it is a prakriti kriyamanani. Living entity cannot do any material act because he is spiritual by nature. That is the point. But the only thing is, because of being tatastha shakti, because of being tatastha, he can come under the influence of the avidya shakti of maya and start identifying with matter. That's the only thing. Otherwise, the living entity cannot actually experience material pleasure or pain. It's not possible. It's only possible if he identifies with the material body by being influenced by the avidya potency of maya. So, the living entity is spiritual but influenceable by either of the energies, antaranga or bahiranga. So Maya, Maya Shakti, she utilizes this influenceable nature of the living entity to trap him in this material world. When he becomes Krishna Bahirmukh. So first he has to become Krishna Bahirmukh. Then the living in, then Maya potency will act on him. If he is Krishna Mukh, she will not trap. This is what is mentioned. Bhavam Dutiya Adhinivesha Ishad Apetasya. For a person who has become Ishad Apeta, Krishna Bahirmukh, then Maya potency starts acting on him. So this very influenceable nature of the living entity is the only hope for the preacher also. So if he is influenceable this way, then he is influenceable that way also. Jiva always remains tatastha. So then the preacher acts the, he does the same thing that Maya potency does. He somehow tries to make him favorable towards Krishna, Krishna and Mukh. Then slowly, 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 his progress towards his constitutional position starts. So basically the point is that all these various organs that are mentioned, gross organs, subtle organ, you know, this is all there. This table you see. So the gross organ is called Karana. The subtle organ is called Srotra. The sense devatas are the dig devatas and the sense object is Shabda. Then when it comes to nose, the gross nose is called Nasika. The subtle organ is called Ghrana. Jahra Ghrana Mukunda Pada Tulasim, it is mentioned. So whenever, so it is subtle nose which is actually experiencing the smell. The Ashwini Kumaras are the sense devatas for the sense of smell. The sense object is Ganda. When you talk about eyes, Akshini are the gross eyes, Chakshu. So Chakshurum Militam Meena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha, he says. So which means, please make my subtle eyes respond to spiritual stimulus. It does not literally mean, please open my eyelids. Not like this. Chakshuhu Unmilitam. He doesn't say Akshini Unmilitam. It is a Chakshuhu Unmilitam. So Chakshu means the subtle eyes. So that which has the potential to be spiritualized is the subtle ingredient. The gross body remains gross only in one sense. Then when you come to the tongue, the talu is called the gross tongue, that which you can see, but that is jihwa. So then Varuna is the sense devata for tasting and rasa is the sense object, like that. So charma is the gross skin, tracha is the subtle skin, and the trees, the presiding deity of the trees, they are the sense devatas which control the sense of touch, and sparsha is the sensation. You can take the PPTs from me. Dhyaurakshini Chakshurabhutpatanga Pakshmani Vishno Rahani Ubecha Tadruvijamba Parameshti Dishnam. So now that you have understood these terminologies, now I will not go deep into these verses, you know, we will just breeze through these verses. The sun devata arises from his eyes and the form arises from his eyes. The day and night are eyelashes of the form. The abode of Brahma is the movement of his brow. Varuna arises from his palate and taste arises from his tongue. The Vedic verses are the top of his head. Yama is his front teeth. Affection is the two rows of teeth. His smile is Maya, which illusions all men. His glance is insurmountable samsara. Shyness is his upper lip. Greed is his lower lip. Dharma is his chest. And the path of adharma is his back. Brahma is his penis. Mitra and Varuna are his testicles. The oceans are his abdomen and the mountains are his bones. O best of kings, the rivers are veins of the universal form. The trees are his body hairs. The wind with the prowess of Anantasesh is his breathing. The movement of time is his walking. The movement of living beings, birth after birth, is his play. O best of the Kurus, the clouds are his hair. The twilight is his clothing. Avyakta Prakriti is his intelligence. The moon is his mind, the shelter of all change. They say that the Mahatattva is his chitta. Rudra is his false ego. Horses, mules, camels and elephants are his nails. All animals are his hips. The birds are his skill and crafts. Manu is his deliberating intelligence. Humans are his house. The Gandharvas, Vidyadharas and Apsaras are his musical ability. The armies of demons are his prowess. Brahmanas are his face. The Kshatriyas are his arms. The Vaishyas are his thighs. And the Shudras are his feet. He is endowed with the followers of various devatas. The methods of sacrifice with ingredients along with groups of devatas with many names are his duties. So basically it means whatever you see in this material world, it all is one or the other limb of this Virat Purusha. Basically nothing in this world exists beyond the realm of this Virat Purusha. Everything is covered. So then, the last two verses of this chapter. So here it is mentioned. Yānasā vīśvara vigrahasya yas sannivēśat katito mayāte sandāryate smin vapuśīsta viṣṭe manasva buddhyāna yatosti kinchit. Asav Ishvara Vigrahasya, this form of the Lord, Yaha Sannivesha, with many, many limbs, Katito Mayate, has been described by me to you, Iyan, to some extent. Sandaryate Manaha, Asmin Stavishte Vapushi, Manaha Sandaryate, the yogis concentrate their mind, Asmin Stavishte Vapushi, on this gross form of the Lord, Swabuddhya, along with their intelligence. The intelligence will say, you see, you wanted to enjoy this, this belongs to the Supreme Lord. Oh, you wanted to enjoy in this planet, oh, that planetary system itself is one of these bodily limbs of the Lord. Like that. Na yatosti kinchit, there is nothing more than this in this material world. Which means, everything is covered by the Supreme Lord. Or everything is controlled by the energy of the Supreme Lord. Nothing is beyond the zone of control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the understanding. So, Srila Vishnu Jagadagur mentions here. So this verse says that there is nothing more than this in this material world. What does it mean? He says, whenever the mind wanders because of its fickle nature, it should consider using its intelligence and think. This is so and so limb of the Lord. This leads to all thoughts becoming thoughts of the Lord. Oh, I can't independently enjoy this. This belongs to this personality. Like that. Prabhupada writes, materialistic scientists and philosophers cannot conceive of anything spiritual because it is beyond their experience. It's beyond their experience. Therefore, the Lord out of his mercy manifests this Virat form. This process of meditation on the Virat Rupa diminishes the bad qualities gradually, and then it gradually leads to devotional service. Slowly such a person will realize that God is present everywhere and will stop committing offenses to all jivas. This stage of God-mindedness diminishes one's pride in challenging the existence of the Lord. So when it says that it gradually leads to devotional service, does not mean that a meditator on the Virat Purusha automatically takes up to devotional service. It means that while meditating, if he comes in touch with a pure devotee, only then he can become a pure devotee. Otherwise, there is no other way. Even in the yoga ladder, when it says that, you know, Sakama Karma Yoga, Nishkama Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, it's not that, it's not ladder in the sense that one living entity actually traverses through all these paths. Some of them are like that. For example, after Sakama Karma Yoga, one, it's a natural transition to Nishkama Karma Yoga. After Nishkama Karma Yoga, it is an optional transition to Jnana Yoga. In fact, Krishna does not recommend it also so much. So, like the yoga ladder that is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, it's not that one living entity actually traverses through all these paths. The rungs of the ladder just merely indicate that one path is higher than the other path. That's all. That does not mean that after this path, a person has to traverse through the next path. It's not like that. For example, for one who is practicing Jnana Yoga, after perfecting it, he will not practice Ashtanga Yoga. That's not the way the yoga ladder should be understood. And one who practices Ashtanga Yoga does not automatically go to practice Bhakti Yoga. That is also not automatic. Bhakti Yoga means there is only one means of gaining the qualification for Bhakti Yoga. Whether you are in Sakama Karma level, or Nishkama Karma level, or Jnana Yoga level, or Ashtanga Yoga level, or beyond, or outside this yoga ladder, beyond the Vedic realm only, the only way to get Bhakti is through association of a pure devotee. So whether you have previously practiced Ashtanga Yoga or Jnana Yoga, does not make you any more specially favorable for accepting Shuddha Bhakti. So, one should not think that this yoga ladder is a natural transition. Just like when you stand on an escalator, automatically it will take you up. It's not like that. Just that the rungs indicate that one is above the other. That's all. But it's not a natural transition. Some are not. Sakama Karma to Nishkama Karma is natural transition. But Nishkama Karma to Jnana Yoga need not be. Because Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita, so many places, that what can be achieved by Jnana can be achieved by practice of Nishkama Karma only. That liberation which Jnana Yogi seeks by just continuing to practice his prescribed duties in a detached way, he can achieve that same liberation. So, to achieve liberation, a Nishkama Karma Yogi need not pass through the path of Ashtanga or Jnana Yoga. And a Jnana Yogi, after perfection, he does not perform Ashtanga Yoga. He may sometimes, if he comes in touch with some Ashtanga Yogi guru and he gets influenced by his preaching, then he may take up. Otherwise, it's not a natural transition. And it's not that all Ashtanga Yogis become Bhakti Yoga and always everyone goes to Vaikuntha only. So, the scriptures talk about different destinations for these different yogis. And these are permanent destinations only. You know, Brahma Jyoti or Vaikuntha or... And only one who practices Shuddha Bhakti, he may go to Vaikuntha and establish a personal relationship with Supreme Lord in one of the five rasas. That's the point. So, that's the way in which the yoga ladder also should be understood. Like that. Otherwise, when we say ladder, only one person climbs the ladder. So, after first rung, he only goes to the second rung, he only goes to the third rung, he only goes to the fourth rung, and then goes up like that. So, what? This is not that kind of a ladder. It is more of a, you can say, this is like a yoga hierarchy rather than a yoga ladder. Yeah. So it's not exactly that kind of a ladder. Last verse. Yes, bro. Can you pass the mic? Not necessary. Many times he settles in one of the rung only. Yeah, he will not go up, yeah, automatically, correct, yeah.
Prabhuji, I had a question there. That this ladder we are saying, so is it that now when we say Nishkam, then above it goes Gyan Ashtang, so they are near to Bhakti, something like that? Like it's very easy for them to...
Is it easier for them to accept bhakti? Not necessarily. It could be more difficult also. So whenever for a person who is very used to meditating on the impersonal aspect of the Supreme, for him to accept the personal form of the Lord becomes very difficult. So whenever the scriptures talk about someone taking up to devotional service, or even he took up to devotional service, if he has to speak about that, he always speaks about a Jnani Yogi. He was a Jnani Yogi, even he took up to devotional service. Atma Ramascha Munayo Nirgranta Api Urukrame Kurvanti Ahaitukim Bhaktim, he says. And the word Api comes. Api means despite. Despite being a Jnani Yogi, he took up. And Shukadeva Goswami says, Parinishtito Api Nairgunya Uttama Shloka Leleya. Nairgunya Parinishtito Api. Even though I was perfectly fixed in Brahman, still I took up to devotional service. Which means, for one who is fixed on that Brahman, impersonal aspect of the Lord, it is very difficult to take up to accept bhakti, which involves worship of the personal form of the Lord. So, therefore it is not necessary that someone who is higher up in the ladder is more favorable to take up to bhakti. It's not even like that. It has nothing to do with that in one sense.
Or independent, this.
Yeah.
All processes.
But having taken up to bhakti, if a person by practice of Ashtanga Yoga or Jnana Yoga has completely purified his Swabhava, then his progress becomes very fast. That is there. But still, the practice of Jnana very much tinges his practice of Sadhana Bhakti also. His prior practice of Jnana tinges his practice of Sadhana Bhakti, and eventually those who, it is mentioned in the by Acharyas, that those who take up to those with a heavy Jnana background, even though they may come in touch with pure devotees, accept pure devotional service, but for them to progress to Vraja Bhakti, because generally those who practice from Jnana to Bhakti have a very strong sense of Aishwarya, Aishwarya Bhava. So for them to progress till Vraja Bhakti is generally very difficult, not possible. But for one who may come from other backgrounds and take up to Bhakti, they have a fairly better chance. So each process gives a particular kind of obstacle and a particular favorable thing. Jnana gives favorable because the material impressions are lost. But it is unfavorable in the sense that the practice of Jnana itself is like poses a kind of obstacle for one's progress. But a heavily karmic, materialistic person taking up to it, for him the Swabhava Shuddhikaran itself takes a long time. But he may not have a kind of obstacle posed by his prior practice of Jnana or anything like that. So each path brings a particular favorable thing and a particular thing which is unfavorable. Like that. You can pass the mic.
that verse is there in Bhagavad Gita, Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra Sarvam Chamai Pashyati. So it speaks about which type of devotee? It's like pure devotee only, or
that is comes in the 6th chapter, no? Ashtang Yogi.
So Ashtang Yogi.
Yeah. So such verses are there, but the understanding of those verses when it comes to an Ashtang Yogi and a pure devotee, the you know, it is such kind of verses are interpreted in such slightly different ways. So it's not exactly, a pure devotee does not see the presence of the Lord everywhere in the same way an Ashtang Yogi sees the presence of the Super Soul everywhere. This is slightly different way in which he sees. It's not the same vision. Okay. So, he says, last verse, Sasarva divrityanubhuta sarva atma yata svapna jane kshitaikah tam satyamananda nidimbajeta nanyat prasajyedyata atma patah. The yogi furnished with the impressions of his senses in his mind from many, many births in the past, which are temporary, like a single dream experience of all sorts of men and enjoyment, will worship the Lord, an ocean of bliss, eternal in time and space, and nothing else, since those things will cause degradation. So basically this verse says that the UPS is not functioning. Too many things are connected, then you should probably remove those things. It's getting... So don't connect any other thing through the UPS. Just keep the, otherwise the projector will get damaged.
Okay, okay.
Okay. So basically in this verse Shukadeva Goswami says that even though it's an imaginary form, other than this, any other imagination will cause degradation. Even though it's an imagination, but this is the bona fide way of imagining. There is a bona fide way of imagining, and there are unlimited non-bona fide ways of imagining what a Virat Purusha is. So he says that one should imagine or meditate only on this form of the Virat Rup as described here. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this first chapter of the second canto. So we'll start the second chapter.
We'll take a short 5-minute break.